listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are on a beautiful Thursday, December 27th.
It's
freezing ass cold Thursday.
Oh, you, yes. You L.A. wimp, you. Is it cold? Has it dropped below 60? Oh, it's so cold. You're born and raised here, aren't you?
Yes.
Last winter, I was in Chicago. Before I moved here, I was walking to the train. My right eye froze shut. That's cold, man. That's cold.
But a good look.
And I'm standing at the 7-Eleven just with one eye shut. The guy's like, can I help you? He's like, just thawing, thanks. Sitting there. The lashes froze together. Can you believe that?
Strolling.
It's true.
Really?
That's salt water. So think about how cold that must have been.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We're sitting there with my eye froze shut, looking like this very angry Popeye. Which is not a good look for me.
No, it's not. I don't think so. But it is cold. It's unseasonably cold. But yet, it brings the season to us,
right? It does.
It makes the season actually feel like Christmas.
Puts a little crisp snap in the air.
And your walk.
What?
Yeah, you got to end your walk.
Oh.
You got to be fast. You got to.
Okay. Yeah, I thought you said walk.
No.
Snap peas.
No.
You know. No. But then again, I have to get out more, Michael.
You do, really indeed.
Do. So
Paul,
drunk.
Do you know something?
Yes.
This is our 133rd show.
Really?
Last show of the year.
Really?
2012. 133 shows later. Yeah.
133 shows. I told you.
Except the old Carol Channing girl.
Yeah. 133 shows. She was our second guest. Yes. And we learned a valuable lesson that day, don't do speakerphones with Carol Channing.
Because
she's very verbal.
God bless her.
There was a lot of overlap. And it was an audio nightmare, basically. It was an audio train wreck. Very funny show to listen to, our second one. You can hear the terror in Michael and my voices.
Oh, my. Yes.
But anyway.
She's delightful. So, listen, we better start off and pay the bills here. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We are grateful to Performing Arts Live, as always, for lending their support to our weekly live arts calendar.
Another show loaded with talent today, Paul.
Loaded.
Yeah, we are so loaded.
Yeah.
That we have got three guests today. Three.
Three.
One on the line from Washington, D.C., taking time off during his Christmas vacay. You notice the lingo there?
You are just...
And from his starring role in Avenue Q here in Los Angeles, to which he'll return on January 4th. We'll be talking to the amazingly talented Chris Kaufman in just a few minutes.
Yes, talk to him shortly. He's waiting for us on the line. We'll chat with him in just a little bit.
Yeah.
And speaking of the amazingly talented, in studio with us today, we have an American Idol. I told you, Michael, I can't drink before noon. We have American Idol top 24 favorite from season 5, the Velvet Voice crooner himself, the one and only Bobby Bennett. And let me throw a little applause Bobby's way. And since we have the star of Avenue Q with us today, we thought it only fitting indeed to have the brains behind the Q and its much deserved success, one of LA's hottest directors who's been with us before, a great friend of State of the Arts, the always charming Richard Israel is back, and he's better than ever.
Yeah.
How are
Hello,
you?
Hello, boys.
Yeah.
Oh,
good to have
goodness.
You both.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
We can talk now.
You can.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You can stop pretending
we're not here.
Yes, okay.
But you're doing it very... Actually, I was a little worried, because you were very quiet.
They were, weren't they? Uncommonly quiet.
They were uncommonly quiet, because they were so chatty before the mics went on.
Another
A little too chatty.
Before the mics went on, we couldn't shut them up, you know?
Well, you know. So, Paul, let's... see how your week was. I haven't seen you for a week, excepting I did have the pleasure of seeing you on Christmas Day briefly.
Yes, came by for our Christmas holiday shindig.
Yeah.
We did an open house at my house for Christmas.
Fantastic. All showbiz people,
I'm Italian, and if we don't feed people on Christmas,
amazing
we go
food.
To hell, and we don't wait online.
Really?
That's really the way. You have to feed people. So.
And feed them. You said you had 13 pounds of meat there.
17. We did. 17 people, 13 pounds of cold cuts.
Cold cuts.
It was all
now
gone.
Do the math on that.
I know, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's not counting cheeses. That's not counting pastries. That's not accounting all of the other stuff that we had.
And that Greek caviar.
And that, oh, the tiramisu salata.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, because Monica and I are collectively the most OCD couple ever, the
right.
little note cards with everything, if it was gluten-free or vegan
funny.
And all
this stuff. Oh, very, very classy.
It was great.
Classy.
Yeah. Then, of course, the fun thing to do is just all swap them all, and then just wash the line for the bathroom, get longer and longer.
You know,
but it's Christmas.
Yeah. Well, I had a lovely time. Thank you for inviting me.
What did you do the rest of your day?
You know, I did many things. Stopped at other places, other people's homes, yeah. and eventually came home, because it was all about my dog and me this Christmas, you mm-hmm. know. He's a beagle, and he's a 12-year-old boy. He's like my son.
What's your dog's name?
Kobe.
Kobe.
Yes, Kobe. And he's a doll baby, and I don't like to leave him for too long of a period of time. So came back, we cooked dinner, we played games. He had new toys. And
you played games?
Yeah.
Really?
Kind of beagle
games?
Game. Hide around the house, I hide. He comes to find me. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You hide.
Yes.
No. No, just out of curiosity, that. Michael, do you wear anything in particular for this game?
Well,
uh-oh.
You had to go there,
he's a beagle.
Didn't
do you dress like Lucy or Charlie Brown? What exactly happens
Well, yeah, but that's a lovely. Whole other show.
Okay. Bobby's like, move on.
I just want to say very quickly, one of the other things that I did, which was lovely over the holiday, is I attended the Performing Arts Center Presents The Gift, a celebration of arts. And this is an organization that's in the San Fernando Valley. Their mission is to help students to learn the importance of living passionately with integrity and commitment. And it is their hope that when our children or your children leave the program, they are not only accomplished performers, but very rich human beings. And I must say, it was a really spectacular evening of dance, ballet, hip hop, for all age groups. And it was very professionally produced and with 200 people in this beautiful space in the Arts Center of theirs. And a very dear friend of mine, Jackie Evans, choreographed this. Jerry Evans' wife,
yes.
You know, the choreographer,
mm-hmm.
the well-known
yeah.
choreographer. And we had a blast.
Jerry does work with you on Broadway World, too, right?
Yes, he does. He produces all the Broadway World television things that
right.
I do. So it was great fun, and I just wanted to shout out to them because they are an amazing organization. They have about 150 teachers and about 350 students.
Is wow. there a website for the organization?
There is a let's see here. I don't see it on the program here, but it's the Performing Arts Center. So it is the Michael Peters Scholarship Fund, the Sally Whalen Scholarship Award, and the Jessica Rawls Scholarship Fund. They're out here in the San Fernando Valley. I'm sure they're...
Well, we'll find that information. Yeah. We'll throw it out there for our next episode.
Perfect.
Next
That's
broadcast.
Great. And I know we need to go to Washington, D.C. right now.
We will. Give him his intro that he is so due, Michael, and I will try to get him on the electric telephone here.
Well, I will, Paul. I had the pleasure of meeting our first guest last weekend when I went to review the hugely popular Doma Theater production of the Tony Award-winning musical Avenue Q at the Met Theater in Hollywood. His performances as Princeton and Rod were nothing short of spectacular, and I that's not even a big enough word to say how talented this young man is, as was the entire production, I might add. Please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, the singer, actor, and puppeteer extraordinaire, the star of Avenue Q, Mr. Chris Kaufman.
Chris! Chris, do we have you?
Wow, hi. Hey, guys. Hey, Paul. Michael, thanks for having me.
You are. It's nice to have you.
Not at all. Boy.
So glad you were available.
I know. Well, you know, I hear about how cold it is there, and it is about 30 degrees here, so I don't want to hear any complaints of the weather up there.
He starts off on that with that attitude, right?
And you guys are getting some weather, too, right?
We are. We've been getting mixes of rain and snow and everything you can imagine over here.
You know,
it's the perfect East Coast weather situation. Very unpredictable, but fun.
I know exactly what you're going through because I was driving over here today and I actually saw two clouds. Two of them.
Oh, no.
Two. So I'm just...
Well, drive carefully.
Just have my fingers crossed.
Exactly.
My mother's like, I don't want to hear that bullshit. But she's back in Connecticut. She gets very angry with me. I don't want to hear them freezing my friggin' ass off.
You see, that's so East Coast, isn't it?
It is.
That kind of talk.
Yeah, charming language.
So, Chris, is this your first production of Avenue Q, or how long have you been associated with the show?
This is my first production of Avenue Q. It's been one of my top five dream roles to play, so to have this opportunity has been amazing. And, of course, to work with someone like Richard and this company has been just equally amazing, because it's a production that I grew up in college listening to in my car and just envisioning playing the role one day. And I can't believe it's been so long since it was first premiered on Broadway. It's been several years, at least 10, I think.
Really?
Since it,
10 years.
Yeah, somewhere in there. But regardless, I mean, it's just been a fun production, and I was telling someone the other day, you know, this is one of those shows where, you know, you have certain roles where you come on and you think, oh my gosh, I have to go through that scene, or boy, I have to slug through that. But every scene in this production is just delicious and so much fun to be a part of, and just perform. And I look forward to even just some of the book scenes, just to get up there and play those puppets. So, well, it is a great role.
You know, I said this to you after the show, Chris, and I meant this sincerely, to watch you in particular, but everybody on stage, I mean, all of your co-stars, everyone in the show, it was such an amazingly talented cast. And the young lady that's in the show, who was the puppeteer that taught so many of all of you the ins and outs of working these particular kinds of puppets, which are very Muppet-like.
Yes.
But the synergy between yourselves and the actual puppets are so extraordinary. And you, as the actor, take on you give the character to the puppet, but you kind of, in both of you, are giving each other something. It happens simultaneously. It's fascinating, you know, to watch it in a theater of this size in particular. I've seen it in you know, the Pantages Theater here in Los Angeles, where I must say that this production, in every sense of the word, was just as wonderful and important to see as it was in the larger setting. And in some ways, even more interesting, because you were in this smaller setting where you were right on top of it, right there in the action. And how you guys did this and learned, how long did you rehearse to achieve the working of these puppets so professionally?
Well, we worked for about a month, starting in the beginning of October, and then we opened November 9th. So we had pretty much every night we were working with the puppets, and a lot of the credit for the puppetry training, as you mentioned, goes to Libby Letlow, who's in our cast.
Yes.
And she's a fantastic puppet master who has trained individuals at the puppet school in Sherman Oaks. It's a fantastic program to get people used to that kind of style of puppetry, because it is very different from a traditional, you know, Sesame Street style that's over your head, or something of a different nature. But this, you know, takes a lot of skill, and she really brought that to the table. So we owe a lot to her, first of all, and then secondly, it was just constant, you know, looking into a mirror and getting used to creating a puppet being a part of you, as opposed to it being a separate thing from you. That was an interesting concept to me. I'd never even thought of that before. The idea that the puppet is not, you are not a puppeteer operating a puppet. Mm-hmm. The puppet is an extension of you. So wherever you look, the puppet looks. Wherever you emote, the puppet emotes. And if you don't feel those things, the puppet won't, because the puppet can only do so much. But you, as the puppeteer, have this whole palette of you know, entertainment and ability that you can bring into that character. So it was an amazing learning experience, not just as a puppeteer, but as an actor, because it reminds you of all those things that you're capable of.
And Chris, did you have puppetry experience before this, or extensive puppetry experience?
I had a little bit. I had, you know, studied some in some workshops when I lived on the East Coast, and there was some workshops I worked via the Connecticut College, had a fantastic puppet program, and I learned a lot about papier-mâché and larger scale puppets, kind of the thing that you would, you know, they would call the mystic paper beast. There was this thing that where we learned how to work with puppets that were twice our size, and you'd have to use rods to move them and be a part of that. But as far as this, I had always just been fascinated with Sesame Street and the Muppets. Yeah. And it was just really just through osmosis and learning about, you know, how they moved and walked, and studying Jim Henson's style with someone as simple as Kermit. I mean, to watch something that's just a felt puppet with little eyes and the way he moves his hand even slightly gives that puppet kind of either a melancholy feeling or a very happy feeling, and just to see that alone,
I can. Perfect economy. It's just you have to be very, you know, just simple with it, and those small gestures become
right.
So telling.
Absolutely, and talk about being a triple threat in this show. I mean, you are an actor, you are a singer, and you are a puppeteer, and yet you
and a floor wax.
Yes,
yes, and a dessert topping.
Is that yeah,
and all
yeah, I do it all.
And listen, I want to shout out to your co-star Danielle. Is it Judovitz. Okay, I tried to say it in a French kind of way. Thank you very much.
Oh, yours is lovely too, though. That's a great, yeah, yeah.
But Danielle, you were spectacular. So yes, everybody in this show, and I urge people to go see this show. Really, we'll talk about it some more with Richard, and we'll tell people how to do that. But listen, thank you, Chris, so much for taking time out of your holiday day today and talking with us back here in Los Angeles.
We appreciate it.
We look forward to your return.
It was my pleasure, guys, and thank you so much, and good to hear from you, Richard.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, bye.
All righty. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What a nice guy.
Very nice and
very
super
nice.
Talented.
Well, it was nice on the air. Before we got on the air, it was a little dodgy. I want to bring that up. But no, I'm kidding.
How old is he, just out of curiosity, Richard? Do you know? It looks like he's 26, something
no,
like that.
No, that's not right.
That's not
I
right.
I think he's 28.
28?
29 or 30.
Oh, my.
He's somewhere between 28 and 31.
Thank you for...
We've never really...
I tell you, thank you for those specifics, Richard.
I don't do an age test. I just,
he looks...
Bad idea.
Whatever he is, he looks young.
He's a youngin'.
And hugely talented, but...
Yes.
And he does seem like a very, very nice man.
I'm sure he is.
So, speaking of nice men,
yes,
let's talk to our next one.
Yes.
As we mentioned earlier, our next guest is not only familiar to millions of television viewers nationwide for his long-remembered participation as a top 24 finalist on season 5 of American Idol, but he starred throughout the Southland in various musical theater shows and nightclubs, both in Orange County and Los Angeles. To the latter, he'll be returning to Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal this Sunday, December 30th, with his all-new show, Here's to Life, a New Year celebration. Give it up for the one, the only, the Bobby Bennett. Yeah, baby. How are you?
I'm great. That was quite an intro.
Did you like that?
Who are they talking about?
It wasn't me.
What was that?
Oh, I thought it was a Who joke, because it was the Who intro.
No, I'm not that clever.
Oh.
He was on third.
So you're back.
I am. Thank you for having me.
You're doing the Federal.
Again.
Yes. No, I know you did Vitello's.
I did Vitello's. These,
but this will be his third time headlining.
I did Vitello's, and then I did the Federal in June, and then now I'm back.
So you know what an awesome room it is.
Yeah, it's a great room.
Isn't it great?
Yeah, I love that room.
It is. And he's doing big business,
so if
as
you,
usual.
If you've done
it's
it...
It's selling well?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Oh, why do you seem so surprised?
It's selling well?
You never know.
The hell was that?
Bobby,
very well.
Oh, it's selling well, huh?
Oh, really?
Kel Surprise.
Very pleased.
Bobby, this is your third gig with Sterling, but your second one at the Federal. What's different about this show than the last one? Like, is it a holiday theme? Or?
You know, this one is more of a celebration of, I guess, the past year. I mean, we've had a rough year, so it's a celebration of all the heartaches and then all the happiness that we've had this year. There's a few holiday songs, not many, though. I figured people would be so tired of it after radio stations playing Christmas music since before Thanksgiving.
Yes, yes.
So around Halloween, I think.
Actually, at the end of Halloween. So I have a few Christmas songs, but that's about it. But it's a lot of jazz standards, a few pop standards, and Broadway, of course. And then I'm joined by four fabulous guest singers, Alex Bartosz, April Walsh, who I did American Idol with, Aaron Bull, who was in Hairspray over in Orange County, and then
3D theatrical down there?
One of them, yeah. And then Zach Crocker, who I think did Spring Awakening somewhere. But yeah, so I have these great singers with me, and it's going to be a great show.
Now, you mentioned a lot of genres there. First of all, it is nice to hear that you're just going to sort of season it with holiday things, because I think it's a double-edged sword, too. I think people do want a little bit of that flavor, so I think it's nice that you put a couple in there, but it's also nice to hear that it's not going to be floor-to-ceiling.
A whole hour and a half of Christmas tunes.
But with all the ones that you mentioned, the standards, the jazz standards, the Broadway, what do you have a particular favorite genre that you like? Is there one that if you, in your dream show, if you could just do one style, sort of like the desert, you're on a desert island, you can only sing one style. What is it?
Burt Bacharach.
Really?
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 Burt Bacharach.
We love Burt.
I think
Bacharach.
That'll be my next show. Bennett does Bacharach.
Oh, my.
Or sings Bacharach.
I was going to say, I saw that film in college. I was experimenting. Yeah.
But everybody's done Burt in
one way or another.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, you know, speaking of that, you know who's one of the biggest Burt Bacharach fans? Is Elvis Costello.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, they've worked together.
They've worked together.
A few times.
He had that great show, Spectacle, where he talked about that. He has an interview show, Elvis Costello.
And, you know, I toured with Mr. Bacharach.
Did you?
Yes.
Did
and
you
represented
really?
Him for public relations.
I see all these people he knows.
And Carol Bayer Sager. The two of them had done a very wonderful concept album at the time called Sometimes Late at Night, starting with a track that never finished until the very end of the record. It was one extended track.
Contiguous,
and it took you through a relationship of two people who meet for the first time and start dating and fall in love and get married and have children and start having personal problems and issues and get divorced and you don't know what's going to happen at the end.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Tyrell has a great Bacharach album too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's very cool.
It is.
Is that the
very
first?
Different.
Was that when was that? Because I always thought that the side two of Abbey Road, the Beatles album Abbey Road, was the first contiguous album side from start to finish.
This album was after that. So
it was.
But
this sounds more like sort of thematically, almost like a little rock opera type.
It was.
Yeah.
It wasn't not rock, but it was.
Right.
Definitely something that you put in your car and preferably late at night. It was a very cool thing to listen to, you know.
See, the great thing about that, Bob, if you were to do an evening of Bacharach, is that his canon is so wide that you could do just him and not be locked into one particular style for
Agreed.
The whole evening. And that's that when you know, because there are a lot of composers.
They
that,
sound
you know,
the same.
They're not the same, but their style sits so much on the front of it that you know, okay, it's this particular composer's song. But do you have a favorite composer?
A favorite composer?
Yeah, because you have all the Best of Broadway and Great American Songbook.
Yeah, there's so many of them. I love Cole Porter. I love all those guys from, you know, back in the day up to. People like Cy Coleman, who I think is just an amazing writer, and I don't know if his name trips off the tongue, you know, as some of the other more famous writers.
Right.
But for me, he's certainly written some amazing shows, Little Me and Sweet Charity and The Life. More recently, I think that was his last show on Broadway, wasn't it?
Look, I don't know.
Yeah, no.
You know that I wouldn't know. You just saw that look in my eyes.
I did.
You said, wasn't it? And then
That's
you just
why
saw
I had
my
to
eyes
turn to
just
Richard.
Pinwheel.
Glazy.
You might as well have asked me, you know, to do long division.
I just like good writing, regardless of who it comes from, as long as there's a melody and then as long as there are lyrics that I can actually understand from beginning to end and that they make sense, you know.
Right.
And I appreciate the new music. Don't get me wrong. I do.
But the late stuff, like, you know. Burt Bacharach and No.
But I mean like Adele.
She's
amazing.
Yes.
I like her.
Yes.
Amazing, right?
Yeah, she is.
But she comes to me. She's like an old soul.
Old soul.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know?
Like
and
Amy
that's
Winehouse.
Why I like.
Yeah.
Her.
Mm-hmm.
You know who I love recently, who's just sort of coming into her own now, is Rufus Wainwright's sister Martha. Mm-hmm. Martha Wainwright is just. She's got a very unique voice. Are you familiar with her stuff? And they just did a show at UCLA Royce Hall Christmas with because they're you know, talk about a musical pedigree. Kate McGarrigle and Loudon Wainwright's children, and of course Rufus is phenomenal, and she's wonderful too. Look up Martha Wainwright. But before we do that, we're gonna tell people how to see Bobby's show.
We're
certainly not done talking with them, but I want to throw this information out there.
Yes.
This is Here's to Life. It's Sunday, December 30th. It's a 5:30 to 6 o'clock dinner seating, a 7 p.m. performance, and this is at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal, 5303 Lancashire Boulevard in North Hollywood, is selling out. Reservations a must. 818-754-8700. That's 818-754-8700. And remember, someone mentioned this at the last show we were talking about there. you can take the train. You can take mass transit to this.
Yes, you can.
You can go there. You can have a couple of cocktails and not worry because you can just get on the train and go back. You don't have to drive or park. And it's a great area for that. And I would say it's a great area to walk around and have dinner and all that, but you got dinner right there.
Yes, it's
all
true.
In one.
One-stop shopping.
One-stop shopping.
There you go.
So, Bobby, the show itself, is there sort of a narrative to it? Do you have a story that you're telling? Are the songs telling the story? How are you doing that?
I think the songs probably tell the story. I usually try to set up each song with some kind of story relating to my own life.
Little patter.
Yeah. Great patter. sorry.
He is good with the patter.
Did he?
Yeah.
Really?
Very spontaneous, too.
Yeah.
Too spontaneous? Or?
I don't think you can ever be too spontaneous.
Oh, sure you can.
When I start to see Michael go like this, and I thought, oh, I guess I should stop.
Yeah.
But, I think each song relates to my life in some kind of way. And, you know, since I also work for the Walt Disney Company, that there's a few Disney songs thrown in there for those people.
Nice.
And I'm excited to be working with James Lent again as my pianist.
He did not tell me he was working with him.
And so Michael's worked with him a few times with Stage Star and some other stuff.
Coming up.
Yeah. And so I'm working with James Lent again. Dr. James Lent, actually.
Yes.
So it's exciting.
Did you do an earlier incarnation of Stage Star? Did you?
Yeah, I did one in 2010.
You did.
Yes,
that's where we met.
That's right. I remember.
Absolutely.
Because I remember that he was at the show that I was.
That's right.
I did the little bit shtick.
Well, you did it at the finale.
The finale, yes.
Yes.
And we filmed something too, didn't we?
Yeah. It was filmed for Broadway World.
Yeah, Broadway World. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. You know, we have a track.
Yes, we do.
Of Bobby singing. I think we should share that
with
the listeners.
This is Bobby Bennett, and the track, the song is called I Have Dreamed. Is that
from The King and I, yes.
Okay. Let's give it a listen.
I have dreamed that your arms are lovely.
Really stunning, Bobby. It really is beautiful. That's beautiful. Just so economic. Just really, just very clean and elegant. And just so much of the time, I hear the singers now. They feel a need to add all of this gravy and curly cues and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's so refreshing to hear something so pristine and well executed. And I'm very impressed.
Oh,
I'm very impressed.
Thank you.
And I'm not the big, you know,
not
really,
easily impressed.
No, I mean, I just, I don't feel like, I think that just what we said before, people have a tendency to evaluate some of the more recent music by how much people can jump through hoops while they're doing it. And it's nice to hear some, I mean, what's the old adage, evaluate a chef on his simplest dish?
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful, elegant, simple song that's just executed perfectly.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Wow.
Really enjoyed that.
So, see what we have to look forward to, ladies and gentlemen.
Really enjoyed that.
Yes. You'll come to the Federal. You'll see more.
I will.
I just wanted to say one more time about my guest singers. I mean, they're just phenomenal. And again, their names are Alex Bartosz, who actually headlined a show over in Reno called Man in the Mirror, the Michael Jackson tribute show.
Oh, yeah.
Headlined that, and he'll be with me. Again, April Walsh, who made top 44 of Idol the same year. Right. So that's where I met her. Aaron Bull, who starred in Hairspray over in Orange County. And then, of course, my dear friend Zach Crocker, who was also a Disneyland performer.
Was he not with you the last show?
No.
He was not.
Everyone in this one is brand new.
I know the name, so maybe.
Because he
him.
Came to this show.
Oh, there
so
you
maybe
go.
Maybe saw him on the reservation.
Yeah.
Okay, and once again, very, very quickly, nearly sold out. 818-754-8700 is what you want to call, and this is the Bobby Bennett Show, Here's to Life. It's on December 30th, Sunday, at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal. And we will throw that information out one more time before the end of the hour.
Great food and great show.
Have the fish and chips.
Yeah.
Have the fish and chips.
Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is the artistic director for the West Coast Ensemble Theater Company and the recipient of a Career Achievement Award for directing from the Los Angeles Drama Critics Circle. Some recent directing credits include Leading Ladies at International City Theater, Once Upon a Mattress for Cabrillo Music Theater, The Full Monty and Falsettos, for the Third Street Theater, Gypsy for West Coast Ensemble, and for which he received a LA Weekly Award nomination for directing and the show itself for Outstanding Musical. As I said earlier, Once Upon a Mattress was something in particular that he was able to very successfully reimagine a musical of a vintage musical, actually, that's not done very often anymore. But what Richard did with this show, have you ever seen it, Paul?
Once Upon a Mattress?
Yes.
I did it twice.
Did you?
Yeah, I played Dauntless twice.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
That must have been precious.
Yeah. It was exactly that, Michael. Thank you.
No, I'm saying that
lovely
sincerely.
Compliment.
I would love to have seen you do that. But
it was indeed precious. Yes.
Richard's take on it was very refreshing and very different. Production with Betts Malone and a young man by the name of Scott Reardon, who was from LA's Next Great Stage Star this year. He was actually hired during the competition. So God bless Lewis for always seeing our kids while their competition's in progress. Anyhow, ladies and gentlemen, he has easily earned his place on the hot list of LA's most creative and in-demand directors of theater. Please welcome Richard Israel.
Hey, Richard, how are you?
Nice.
Hey,
Ben.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm great.
Are you?
I'm super great with that yeehaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Richard, you're so busy all the time.
Thanks.
You are. When do you sleep? When do you rest?
Infrequently.
Infrequently, yeah?
Sometimes.
But we're going to have the pleasure of seeing you at LA's Next Great Stage Star
again
this year.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Oh, are you one of the judges?
I am.
He is one of the judges.
I'm the judgiest judge.
Are you? Yeah. Right. You're going to be all cowlish?
Oh, my arms are going to be folded so tightly across my chest.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I will scowl.
Scowl like cow.
You and Bruce Kimmel.
Kimmel does. We just sit at the end of the table and just
scowl. That's
right. That's
great.
So you mentioned his production of a reimagining of Once Upon a Mattress. How was it reimagined?
Oh my gosh! I think certainly from the standpoint of sets and what he brought to that alone was totally.
Where was it?
Out at Cabrillo Music Theater.
Oh, okay.
Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza in the Fred Kavli Theater there. Beautiful 1800 seat.
Yeah, nice venue.
And the talent alone, too. It just seemed to be fresh, and the costumes were gorgeous, and everything was so colorful and so crisp and clean, and nothing tired about this show.
Thank you.
And I say that because I'm not really the biggest fan of this show, or I wasn't until I saw your production.
Thank you.
It can be dated depending on how it's played, because I think so many people have that Carol Burnett thing stamped in their head about it.
True.
But one of the most beautiful songs in musical theater for me is in that show. And it's so poignant because it's Normandy.
Beautiful.
And it's
a beautiful song.
And it's especially touching because, you know, it's medieval. And they're singing about a town that would be known in our lifetimes for something so horrific because of the beaches being stormed during World War II and all that. And I think that's just, it's just such a... It's not especially plot essential. It's not really...
It's not at all.
Not at all.
It's actually whatever the opposite of that is.
Yeah, but it's just a lovely, lovely song. And it's just, when it's done well, it really rings. I love that song.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And I think Richard's casting of the show was really impeccable, from Tracy Lord to Betts Malone, and choosing young Scott Reardon to who was really quite unusual and wonderful in that role, and brought something to it very unique, I thought. But that has a big, you know, when it is connected to a Carol Burnett, and you, that's what you remember about the show as a theater person, I think. And I think that her fame alone from television, and it certainly got airplay on TV. And that's not what happened in this role. With Betts Malone made that role her own. Think about Carol
I would imagine so. Just having met her just for the interview that
right.
we had with her.
Yes, when she was here promoting that. Actually.
Richard, when you direct something that is so known, like something like that, I mean, what do you find more of a challenge? Directing something that you can assume most of the audience is familiar with, or directing a new, like a world premiere or something like that?
I think it's harder to take something that is a known quantity because there is a level of expectation, and my goal is to not meet that at all. And also, I mean, I approach everything from the same sensibility because you can only approach something through the prism of yourself.
Right.
So something like Mattress, I did kind of approach it as if it were a new work just because we were doing it in such a different way, and we were very aggressive about I don't want anything flat on the stage, and I don't want anything that smacks of I did it in high school.
Right.
So the approach is really the same as far as taking it, getting down to the heart and the essential core of the story, which is what keeps it from being dated.
Right.
But it is definitely more challenging because you do have the added hoop to jump through of I don't want that. Here's what I know that I don't want.
Right.
Whereas with something that's completely square one, there's no preconception, so you just do what your heart tells you to do.
Yeah, because people aren't unlearning. They're not unhearing
exactly.
something. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's interesting.
You're always up against that sort of like, well, when I saw it on Broadway, it was like this, which people get to do, but I just try to stay away from that.
Well, I think
then rent the video then.
Yes.
I think that's what he just said is really part of his signature as a director, too. I think you bring that to every show.
Thanks. Thank you.
Because you certainly have to Avenue Q.
Thank you.
And Gypsy, remember?
Yeah, from the last time you
saw him. First time that he was here, he was... were you doing Having It All? I think we promoted Gypsy coming up.
Yeah.
And also The Full Monty, which he did very successfully. And everything he does keeps getting extended as Avenue Q.
Was it Richard's production of The Full Monty that was in the more intimate venue?
It was just this year at the Third Street Theater.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Yeah. And that got great press.
With Will Collier.
Yes.
Who was in studio talking about it. And
that has to be a challenge. Something like that. Because, I mean, it was a smaller venue, correct?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, which is why we wanted to do it. Because, again, it's something like what we've done with Avenue Q, I think, is taking something that I think people have a conception of it as a large show.
Right.
And Full Monty is a giant show, but ultimately it's a tiny story.
Yeah.
So there are certainly nuts and bolts challenges of this ceiling is 11 feet high, how am I doing that thing?
Right.
But the ultimate storytelling, it works so beautifully in a small space.
Well, and it's a different experience for the. It's a significantly different experience for the theater goer because it's you're sharing something so much more intimate than you and with that show especially intimate at least in the final scene.
Yeah, that was a fun tech experience.
There was something fun that happened. I think. Well, who did we talk about it? We talked about it with Will. It happened to him, actually.
Opening night.
Opening night, yes. Yeah. When the moment you're talking about it.
Was it a wardrobe malfunction?
That's exactly what it was.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And there was that moment of surprise for the audience. Yeah. Just a very brief moment, but nevertheless, it did happen.
It was a good nanosecond for a few people.
It did for Will.
Yes.
For Will. But Shannon Warren seemed to be delighted by that. So,
she talked about it a lot.
Yes, she did, and on this show. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's right. She was here with him.
That's
she?
Right.
Yeah.
They were together. But tell us about Avenue Q. I mean, what is it that are you attracted to these things and you find them or I'm sure the theaters are calling you left and right all the time.
You're very nice. They actually did approach me to do it, and it wasn't necessarily a show that I had the burning yearnings to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the opportunity to do it small was really appealing. Because, like you, I'd seen it big, and it's great. And people think of it as a big show, and it is not. And so the opportunity to do it where you actually saw what was going on and saw the nuance was really appealing. And I cannot picture doing it in a big space, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I can't, because there's stuff going on with the puppetry and these teeny little turns of the head and these teeny little... There's a scene in the show, it's like a breakup scene, it's one of the longer book scenes, and it is beautiful and heartbreaking, and it was never so when I saw it large, because I couldn't see it.
Right.
And to see it that close and to see this very honest scene between puppets, and people are really moved by it. So I'm very grateful.
Well, you just said something very key. I turned around at one point when I was watching the show and looked at the audience in whole, because I was sitting on an aisle to the stage right from the perspective of the actors. And every person was smiling from ear to ear. And, you know, it's some provocative language in the show.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And certainly some provocative scenes. And it didn't make any difference to these people.
No, it
really
doesn't.
Didn't. They all just got it and loved it and couldn't get enough of it. And I love the headline, you know, the subheadline here, you know, on Avenue Q. It's the only Tony Award-winning musical to ever proclaim it sucks to be us.
Yes.
Yeah. And I want to say something else. Musically, this band that you have was extraordinary.
Yeah, they are.
Truly hot. Extraordinary. And the young man that was conducting, who was that?
Chris Raymond.
Chris.
Yeah.
Chris, if you're listening, you rock, my friend, because you are a complete pro, as is your band, and that carried this show just even further.
They burned it down, huh?
Yes, they did.
Oh, they burned
it
down.
It was totally, I think, probably one of the best bands in a theater setting that I've heard.
Yeah, they're so...
In a small theater setting.
They're so integrated with the show, and I actually watch them watch the show.
Yeah.
When they're not playing.
Yes.
They're not, you know, texting. They are watching the show.
They better not be texting.
Well, I would kill them. But,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
So they're not doing it because
I'd be
kill
right
them,
behind you.
But also, they just are very engaged in the show, and they love doing it.
Yeah.
And they're also all, like, 20. They're, like, kids.
Amazing.
Great.
Amazing.
Yeah, they're great.
And they were all in their suits, and they were all so in the moment all
it.
The time. Yeah. Paul, you and Monica must go see this
Can
show.
Can I see it? I don't have all my information. It must have extended because all of my information.
It is extended. I gave you a second document about
it. Oh, no. I don't have that one. Oh, here it is.
Yes, you do.
Here it is with all my other crap. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Because I was looking for the information. So this is the Doma Theater, theater company at the Met Theater. It's 1089 North Oxford Avenue in Los Angeles. And it has extended now through February 3rd. Oh,
yes.
Awesome. So we will get to see it.
So it comes back and it reopens January 4th.
Oh, that's great.
And runs for another month.
And for tickets, 323-802-4990, 323-802-4990, or domatheater.com. And, of course, theater has the R-E spelling, domatheater.com. Oh, I would love to see that. I will definitely go see that.
Will
I've
you?
I've been dying to see that. I'd like to see
really? And,
I don't like theaters, as you know. I don't like big theaters.
Yeah.
I don't like to go see movies unless it's matinees, because when people talk, it bothers me.
Yes.
So I don't like big, grand things.
Yeah.
I much prefer 99-seat, right in your face.
Well,
stuff.
This is a perfect theater, actually, because it feels bigger than 99 seats, but it is only 99 seats. But there's a lot of breathing room. So
good, because I'm also claustrophobic, and I have social anxiety disorder. So I have a lot of issues.
What a fun date.
Sometimes
and a hunchback.
If you do hear a couple of little whimpers or screams, I hope it doesn't really throw the audience up. Richard, real quickly, I want to ask you something, because you said you didn't particularly have a burning yearning. Do you have a burning yearning for one particular show that you would love
week. No, we're talking about Avenue Q.
The penicillin cleared it right up. What is the...
I'm a new man.
Is there... I'm sorry. I'll provide my own on that one, because I just have my real... is there a show in particular that you really want to do you haven't had the opportunity to
there
do
are
yet?
There are bunches of them. I actually... there's a show called Violet that I... did an MTG reading of about 3 years ago, and I do have the burning yearnings that no penicillin will cure to do a full production of that show.
Violet,
trying to get
called?
That put together.
Musical?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now that was Musical Theater Guild reading.
Okay.
Yeah.
MTG.
Oh,
the lingo.
But
we call it MTG.
Yeah. I don't know the lingo.
In the industry. So yeah, that's a big one.
Okay.
But there's like 10 or 12 that.
Okay.
I would love to get my hands on.
No.
Well, nice to be making a living doing what you love to do, huh?
Very lucky.
Yeah.
I'm really lucky.
Yeah.
It's that time.
It's that time, isn't it?
Michael, we're to baptize our guests with.
We do.
I don't know if you remember this from last time. We always like to ask our guests about an embarrassing onstage performance mishap, an embarrassing thing that might have happened. I don't know if they necessarily have one. It's not a requisite thing, certainly. It could be. I mean, there has to be something that went wrong that's funny or comical or embarrassing
Bobby happened.
Not necessarily this show.
I can't remember anything at all at this moment.
But any performance, not the production you're working on now. Anything in your storied history, Richard, you got to have something.
Oh, but you were an actor as well, and you're
a
singer, and you're all those
wonderful things.
Plus, you did adult films for years.
Well, that was the burning.
Year.
This is an embarrassing career. So I had one moment in my adult career that was not embarrassing, and the rest was just really bad.
Talk about burning urine.
Right? Yeah. And penicillin. Well, that cured that right up. This is like on the spot. I mean, I'm certain that I've said dumb things and dropped things and bumped into things a million times, but I can't think of anything. But Bobby has one.
I just thought of one. I remember doing The King and I, and I remember doing The King and I, and I, you know, during the, when they have to pray to Buddha. Do you remember that part? Buddha. And I made up my own lyrics, and I forgot that I was in the ensemble, but I was one of the only ensemble that was mic'd, and I forgot that I was mic'd.
Oh.
And I said some really foul things.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, yeah, so I remember,
remember what I said.
You
it
don't
was
remember
pretty
what
bad.
You said?
Oh, Buddha, yeah, it was bad.
So you not only said something foul,
but
you said it to the primary deity of the Asian culture.
at the Rose Center Theater in Westminster.
Oh, okay.
The OC.
Yeah. Well, at least you didn't run the risk of offending any Asians.
No,
not down there.
Not down there
not
at
down
all.
There, yes.
But yeah, that's something that popped in my head.
Well.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, Robert Bennett Jr.
Ooh, I feel like I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Full name, trouble.
Yeah. Now, what about during Idol, for God's sake?
Oh, gosh.
Come on.
No, I...
How did you... can you very quickly tell us, how was that process for you getting into Idol?
The process was... It was like something I never experienced before. It was very, what is the word?
Surreal?
It wasn't surreal.
I would think it would be surreal.
Kind of. It was a little surreal. I just felt like I had to be there and that I was going to be there. So I was very determined when I got it. So I was like, all right, I'm here now. What do I do? But it was what I didn't like was the hurry up and wait of television. You know,
right,
let's go. All right, now let's sit for 3 hours while we set up.
Right.
That was very strange. And the editing, that's what I don't like about it. That's what I didn't like. Editing was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like the real life was completely different than what I saw on television.
Right.
Isn't it always?
Because they have to create a world in the editing room.
They
that's
do.
Not necessarily the world of the show.
Exactly. And I remember the biggest question I ever got was, is the show rigged? And like as far as voting, I said, no, not with voting, but I think with editing.
Right.
Because they can make or break you with.
Well, and you can see those kinds of shots. That,
yeah.
You know, when they're pushing America toward a particular person.
Yes, they have to create a villain or they have to create an ingenue or whatever.
Exactly.
I think one of the most interesting things about Idol and these types of shows, and don't think you're getting off the hook, mister. You still, have you got your story?
No, I haven't been thinking.
Because I'm just killing time
I'm just
here.
Embarrassed right now. This is my most embarrassing moment right here.
Which is kind of tragic.
That's how you see these young people like Bobby, and you see them through the growth osmosis is amazing in this short span of time. You know, they kind of pluck you out of obscurity and put you on television. And by the time you step foot into the first real deal competition in front of those judges and the audience and all of America, you suddenly...
And your life changes in an instant.
In a nanosecond, right?
In a nanosecond.
But you're also much more... It seems like much more... refined. I think they probably have styled you and they've done all these things to you and
you know, and you don't get a real chance to like grow and mess up. You know, because
right.
if you grow
right.
you're growing and messing up in front of 40 million people.
Yeah.
Right.
So that what's cool about starting in the clubs, like most people usually do in the clubs getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you can grow and hone your craft.
Right. Yeah,
nowadays, you know, you have to if you mess up it's for everyone to see.
Instant.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But I'm saying that most of you I'm always impressed by the first televised competition that
Good.
everybody has made it that far and actually is doing a pretty darn good job.
See, that's the thing. People don't, and I think there's something that people forget quite, you know, most of the time when they watch those shows, is that if people have made it to this level and they're even on the show, I mean, it sounds trite to say they're already winners. They're already winners, but they're beyond. I mean, it's astoundingly difficult because I think people, you know, John Q America thinks that, you know, you just go and they audition and they, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands in every city, whittled down to that. Just, you know, you're seeing the cream of the crop. And speaking of the cream of the crop, before I forget, yes, we're going to play, have Bobby play us off the air.
Let's just two real quick promo pieces. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, Avenue Q at the Met Theater, Doma Theater's production of Avenue Q at the Met Theater in Hollywood, extended through February 3rd. Make yourself a promise to go see it. And it's very simple. You pick up the phone, 323-802-4990, or go to domatheater.com for tickets. And Bobby Bennett at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal this Sunday, December 30th, 818-754-8700. Reservations are a must. It's almost sold out. You're going to be a killer show in the club. Here's to life, Bobby Bennett.
Gentlemen,
thank you, sir.
Pleasure having both of you on.
Richard,
really,
always.
So much. Pleasure.
And
always.
And of course, our first guest. Thank you for having Chris. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely,
meeting him.
Chris. Thank you, sir. Come back and rock it out in Los Angeles.
And as we head out here, once again, this track is called I Have Dreamed, and it is Mr. Bobby Bennett, offending Asians all over the world.
Oh, God. Did you? Happy New Year, everybody.
Sterling and Paul Strolley, right here on LA Talk.